From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Thank you for joining us today. We are talking about writing today on Newsmakers. We have several guests who are involved with writing on various levels. First of all, a couple of people who've been involved in the Wisconsin People and Ideas Fiction Contest. In fact, the first and second place recipients from last year. Last year's winner is Jackie Thomas, who joins us now. Jackie, welcome.
Hi, good to be here. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. And the runner-up in the contest last year, also the president of the Driftless Writing Center, is Jennifer Morales. Jennifer, thank you very much for being here today.
Thanks for having us on the show and celebrating writing.
Absolutely. I'm eager to get the conversation going, but first let me introduce our third guest, who is Matt Cashin. He's a creative writing professor at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, also an author, an award-winning author. His most recent novel is Our 13th Divorce from Livingston Press, a collection of short stories as well called Last Words of the Holy Ghost, and I can't wait to talk to all of you. Welcome to the show. We'll start with you, Matt, as sort of the academic in the room, I guess. Maybe that's fair, maybe it's not. But when you talk to people about creative writing, either fiction or nonfiction, what is it that you find attracts people to becoming involved in writing as an outlet for themselves?
Great question, and thanks for having us and chatting about writing today. Well, you know, we're all storytellers. We all have a vast amount of material to draw from in our lives. I think telling stories is what we do on a daily basis to get to know each other. So I think a lot of people have lots of great stories to tell, and sometimes it's just a matter of giving them permission and a deadline, you know, and saying, go write some stories. And this to me has been, a great job. I get to work with a lot of great students who have a lot of stories to tell, and we have fun working with them, you know.
You said two things. You said permission and a deadline. Why are both of those things important?
Well, they're not always important to everyone, you know, but I think sometimes deadline pressure can help, right? It certainly helped me in the past. And I said permission because, I don't know, sometimes maybe students just need a little boost of confidence. Maybe they sometimes need an advocate for them, someone who will tell them that their stories matter and to write them, you know, and they will find a supportive audience in our classes and hopefully elsewhere as well. So I try to encourage students to write their stories and to give them a safe space to do so.
Jackie Thomas, who is the winner of last year's Wisconsin People and Ideas Fiction Contest. Jackie, when was the first time that you caught yourself being interested in writing?
I think, like many writers, I would say even in childhood. And I laughed because I was part of the Wisconsin Academy of Science, Arts, and Letters back in 1994 when I was asked to come and present a poem. And then I did not write or submit until this year. So I had this massive break where I was going to workshops a lot and I was writing and learning, but I hadn't submitted anything until this year.
What was it about that period of time? That was about a 25-year period of time where you said you were being creative, involved in the creativity of writing, but not submitting. What caused that, do you think?
I ran a community learning center in a low-income housing property in Madison. And other than like writing movie scripts for summer projects, they're just wasn't time, but I was able to absorb a lot of ideas and develop stories from that, I think.
So you were involved in writing that utilized those skills that you developed, but it wasn't, strictly speaking, your own writing on your own agenda. It was stuff that you were doing for projects that you were involved in.
Yeah, we would do like feature-length films in the summer, and you know, like Mayor Dave Cheslevich once played a mob boss, and Jessica Doyle once played Eleanor Roosevelt, but they were just completely hokey slapstick, like Monty Python kinds of things that let us really have a good time as a neighborhood in the summer and mix ages together in a project.
That sounds really interesting. Jennifer Morales, what about your experience in writing? You were involved last year in the fiction contest, taking second place, but you're also involved in the Driftless Writing Center, which helps people with their own creative writing in a number of ways. When did you first become interested in the craft?
I too started when I was little. I think I wrote a poem when I was 6 or 7 and was like, well, I guess that's it. I guess I'm a writer. But, you know, I hear what Matt was saying about needing to give people permission to be writers and to believe that the stories that they want to tell, whether it's through poetry or playwriting or fiction or nonfiction, that they matter. So that's a lot of the work that we do at the Driftless Writing Center, which is not a physical space, but an organization run by volunteers. We teach writing classes for every age, homeschooled kids to adults who always felt like they had something to write, but they haven't ever taken the moment to put it down on paper. And we just give them that permission by gathering the community together and saying, we're all here to tell our story. How can we do it in a way that feels supportive and productive for everybody?
So when we're talking about writing, everybody, you know, wants to be the best version of themselves that they can be. But I think, Matt, as I'm looking at the different kinds of literature that are available out there, I think people sometimes get intimidated with you know, being allowed to engage in one kind of it or another. Am I doing it right? Is this serious enough? Is there enough depth here? Is this you know, dime store fiction? And what if it is? What in the heck is wrong with it being dime store fiction? How do people get past the intimidation portion of being a writer?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. Sometimes it might take people a long time. Other times it might take some people no time. Sometimes we as writers might get in our own way and critical voices emerge from ourselves or outside sources. But I don't know. For me, I guess I try to remind myself as often as possible that what really matters is the story itself and trying to communicate with a reader, perhaps, and trying to develop some sort of connection between a writer and a reader. And, you know, ideally having some sort of intimate relationship there, whatever that might mean, whatever form that takes. And, you know, we can talk for a long time about all sorts of literary techniques and symbols and metaphors and deep reading sorts of things, which can be fun on its own sort of level. But I think, you know, if readers aren't having a good time reading, then maybe other levels of enjoyment might not be as possible. I don't know. I have a lot of real smart colleagues in the UWL English department who are great teachers and passionate about teaching what they love, you know. And so I think that love comes across and kind of encourages students to catch that love as well, you know. So yeah, we have a lot of fun with it. The intimidation thing, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I try to get out of my own way as much as possible. And I'm laughing because sometimes I tell my students not to think too much and that they can quote me on that if they want to, you know, just write. let other people say what they will about what you've written. And sometimes that's the biggest challenge, isn't it? Just getting the story down. So once you get it down, then you can go back and start revising. I know Jackie and Jennifer have experience with those things as well.
So let's talk about, continue talking about some of those experiences. Jennifer, back to you. What, in your mind, as you're looking at the writing that you and others have been involved in, is there something that the people who have been through your workshops have found particularly helpful as they begin the process of telling their own, well, not, maybe their own stories in terms of experiences that they've been through, but also their own stories as in the things that their mind has conceived?
You know, I cannot say enough about the value of community. It really is about, you know, the magic at the Driftless Writing Center happens when people take a little risk and nobody bites their head off and everybody says, oh yeah, I struggled with that too. Or I wonder how I could do this better. Do you have an idea? And people start sharing those struggles And then all of a sudden you realize that, you know, everyone who tries to write is struggling with some kind of question of doing it well. And as a teacher, when I teach workshops, I am always stressing my worst moments, my, you know, biggest doubts, because even, you know, I have a book out, you know, I win awards on my writing. I still have so much to learn, and there's so much to investigate, and so many different writing styles to try out. And I always go to workshops when I can, because I want to keep learning. So, you know, I try to emphasize that as a teacher, and I think everyone at our center does, to say we're all in this together, and that togetherness gives people the safety to take even more risks with their work.
Hey, you talked about visiting different kinds of workshops and continuing the learning process, and yet as a mature writer, you know, your work, or at least you notice when you read mature writers that sometimes their work has something that is just a voice that's distinctively theirs. How do you take like skills that other people are teaching you or forms that other people are showing you and incorporate into a voice that's kind of authentically yours?
I think it's more about content than about strategy, truly. I think that the seed of our unique storytelling comes from the experience that we're having in our body right now in the world, and nobody else is in there. So you're the only person who can tell that story. But you know, a tool is a tool. The way that you might use a wrench to accomplish a task is different. We're both still using the wrench, right? But we're applying it in different ways to our separate projects. And so, you know, I really think it's about the unique story that each person can bring at that moment, the questions that they are particularly asking about the world in the way that they are particularly asking them. And so there's no danger of like becoming another writer or having your voice muddied by other people if you're really engaging with what's the urgent story you want to tell or the question that you want to explore.
Jackie Thomas, can anyone become a writer?
I think so. I think that we're all oral storytelling on the day to day. And it's just the difference between the people who sit down and try to, you know, craft that into text. You know, when Matt was talking about the need for permission and deadlines, I think about Ira Glass talked once about how it begins with having good taste, that first you have good taste in literature, and then you kind of write in response to that, not necessarily to mimic another writer, although I think a lot of people do try that at first, but more so to be in conversation with literary minds, you know, to be in conversation with people who love words and love what words can do and want to be part of the storytelling community writ large.
Well, that's, it may not be copying.
I want to fess up to something.
Yeah, go ahead.
And that's, yes, when I was a teenager, I totally copied E.E. Cummings' poetry style. I wanted to be E.E. Cummings. If you look at my poetry today, it looks nothing like that. So I think there is a point of like, we go through mimicry as a way to find out about ourselves. But again, the point is, let's get to ourselves, right?
And that's you find that in other art forms too. Music, which I studied in college, in the old days, a lot of composers would learn how to write music and learn how to follow the rules they were supposed to follow in any given era by literally copying down note for note the work of other composers before they began to write their own work. And which leads me to what I was about to ask based on what Jackie said, is that not necessarily copying down word for word somebody else's work, but you see in workshops a lot, or even just private journaling or whatever, where somebody will give you like a prompt or a scenario to begin your writing from. Not that somebody's going to take that and publish it into a novel or a short story or something like that, but is that a legitimate useful tool for somebody who's not quite sure where to begin their writing journey?
I think not even just for beginning it, but for continuing it. And I'm just going to throw a quick example out. In this last year's Best American Essays, there was an essay by a Whitewater author, Alison Townsend, and it was about digressions, but it came in at under 2,500 words. And I just typed it straight out of the book just to try to figure out how in the heck did she write about digressions in under 2,500 words and make it so beautiful, you know? And so I think that no matter where you're at in your writing journey, it does a lot of work for you to really pick apart someone else's work and just try to figure out, like, get under the hood of it with the wrench, like Jennifer says, and figure out, well, how did they do that?
Matt, you were about to say something as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, Jackie said it very well, and I try to do the same thing in my classes. And that question of can anybody become a writer, or can writing be taught, that we hear sometimes, you know. First of all, I'd like to think so. Otherwise, I'd be jobless. but which wouldn't be good. But I mean, you know, you have to supply a lot of models, right? You have to encourage students to read more than they write, I think. And yeah, many of my classes require certain amounts of reading that I want students to in some way kind of imitate, but with original content, you know, which sounds contradictory, but I have an entire class devoted to this idea of, you know, mentoring and seeing models that students might want to imitate parts of. Maybe this is a particular structure or a form. And so I think real hard about a wide range of authors that I present for them. And some of them are very challenging, you know, some of them are very, stylistically different and diverse. And so I ask them to imitate those styles and forms, but without plagiarizing, of course, and with all of the original content. And I think that's a pretty productive exercise. I use a few prompts too on occasion, you know, and students find their own prompts. They're all over the internet. And sometimes they'll tell me that that's how they got a story started, you know. I think that's okay. But yeah, like I think Jennifer was saying, you arrive to yourself. Maybe you do a lot of reading and writing and get some stuff out of your system, and then you arrive at your authentic self, you know, and feel more confident about those stories. I think that's really what we're striving for.
We're talking about writing today on Newsmakers. Matt Cashin is a professor, a creative writing professor at the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse. We're also talking with two authors who are the winner and the second place winner of last year's Wisconsin People and Ideas Fiction Contest. Last year's winner, Jackie Thomas, and last year's runner-up, Jennifer Morales. Jennifer is also the president of the Driftless Writing Center. I'm so glad that they're all joining us today on Newsmakers, and I'm going to talk to them after this quick timeout. We'll talk to them about authors that have influenced their own efforts as writers. And that's all coming up. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to catch a previous episode of our show or hear part of this conversation again, you can find it on our website. It's wpr.org/newsmakers. The program continues in just a moment here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall on the campus of the University of Wisconsin La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking about writing today on Newsmakers. Our guests are Jennifer Morales, Jackie Thomas, and Matt Cashin, and they are all writers in their own right. Matt is a professor at UWL. Jackie is last year's winner of the Wisconsin People and Ideas Fiction Contest. Jennifer Morales finished second place in that contest last year and is also the president of the Driftless Writing Center. Thank you all for joining me, and I wanted to get kicked off by talking about the people who have influenced you as writers. I know you've all been influenced by you know, different teachers and different experiences that have grown up, that are as you've grown as writers, but just in terms of the authors whose writing has inspired you to be writers, I'm interested in learning more about that. Let's start with Jackie this time. Jackie, who is it that has influenced you as a writer?
I have a lodestar author, and it's Joanne Beard, and I just love everything she's ever written. And I'll tell a quick story. I'll give you my standard Joanne Beard story, and this is why I love her as a writer. I got to meet her because I don't have an undergrad in anything, But I was able to just sort of take workshops at UW-Madison long enough that they got tired of me. And so they let me go into the MFA workshops, even though I don't have an undergrad. And I was in a workshop with Lori Moore, and she asked everyone to bring to class a piece of writing that they admired. And I brought Bonanza, which is one of the essays in Joanne Beard's The Boys of My Youth. And Lori Moore has like this really breathy, elegant voice. And she goes, oh, no one's ever brought Joanne Beard before. And then she follows this up with, you know, she's a friend of mine. And I'm like, oh, no, how can this be? You know, like my favorite author, you know, I mean, I get it. You're Lori Moore and everything. But oh, my God. And then she dropped her voice and whispered and said, you know, her partner once wrote a 30-page love scene because her partner is Mark Spencer, the novelist. And it was like, oh, this is so dishy. I'm getting like straight dirt gossip here on my favorite writer. And then lo and behold, she came to class. And so I'm just like gobsmacked in the workshop that week. And there's my favorite writer of all time. And I made the horrible mistake of quoting the author to herself. And I was talking about her essay Cousins, and there's a part where a deer waits in the field beside the road in the cornfield, and it has muscular ears and fabulous eyes. And she corrected me and said, no, those are glamorous eyes. And so I love a writer who every single word matters, and that they will correct you if you say fabulous when it's supposed to be glamorous. And that's why I love Joanne Beard.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that story. That's interesting to hear. And your point about knowing every word of your work and knowing when just one of them is out of place is interesting. Do you find yourself that way about your own writing? Do you meticulously place words like that?
I do, but they don't sit still. Like one of my writing teachers at UW-Madison confessed to going into bookstores and handwriting edits in their books off the shelf and then initialing it. And it's like, yes, I feel that way too. Like every time I revisit a work, I want to juggle something somewhere in one way or another. So do I believe that the individual words matter? Yes, but they're not stable.
Matt Cashin from UWL, who inspires you as a writer?
Well, I'm glad Jackie told that story because I love Lori Moore's work. And I'm sort of jealous that Jackie, you know, had a class with her. And one of my prized possessions actually is a handwritten rejection letter that Lori sent me after I wrote her a letter and invited her to campus for a reading. So I still have that. I mean, she was very busy at the time and conflicted, but she was very nice. But yeah, her stories I've loved for a long time. I teach some of them every semester, a couple of them. Gosh, there's a long list of other writers. I grew up in South Georgia, and so came to learn about Flannery O'Connor pretty early, and she remains an influence. She might be a little out of fashion these days, but I still impose one story every semester on my students, and I think she's pretty smart about writing, too. Her collection of essays called Mystery and Manners has some really good things to say about writing, and her letters are great, too, The Habit of Being. Who else? Faulkner. I go back to him occasionally for, you know, his stylistic flourishes. But so many others, short story writers like John Cheever, I think are really great. Stephen Milhauser, more in a more contemporary sort of context. George Saunders, I love, like so many others. I'm currently reading his nonfiction book, actually, like a lot of people, called A Swim in a Pond in the Rain, which is really a great book about how he loves these Russian writers that I also love, and how he teaches these seven stories in his classes. And so it's a really great book because you get to hang out with George's mind, and you get to see, like you were talking about earlier, Ezra, you get to see how he does a deep dive and talks about some of these stories and how they're put together and these excellent sorts of choices these Russian writers make, like Tolstoy and Chekhov, who I also teach every semester. Chekhov was doing some flash fiction writing back in the 1890s, so I turned students on to him, and they actually end up loving his stuff, you know. A lot of experimental things going on there. But yeah, so many others. I try to read as much as possible. I try to listen to as much as possible. So yeah, that's a start.
and quite a start it is. Jennifer, what about you? You obviously, as these others have people who you rely on for inspiration, for modeling your work, but you talked about earlier on, being influenced by people and their different styles and what you have to learn from them. Who is it that inspired you to write?
Everybody. I read everything. But I'm always drawn especially to writers who are really great with character voice, because that is a driving inherent passion for me. So people like William Faulkner, Barbara Kingsolver, Zora Neale Hurston, all just geniuses, and two of them at least with linguistic backgrounds, and that's interesting to me. Chekhov, also brilliant when you're looking at how to tell a character-focused story in a very short space. He was a pioneer 100 years before any of us thought of flash fiction. Bonnie Jo Campbell, as a person who is writing and living in a rural area, just the validity that she gives to the stories of rural people is so powerful for me right now. And then when you ask this question, for a book I hadn't thought of in a long time, but actually really influenced me about 10 years ago, was Jennifer Egan's A Visit from the Goon Squad. Because lately I've been experimenting mm-hmm. with taking mundane forms of information, like a court order, and or like a transcript, and turning it into fiction. And she has, in that book, I think she's got a story that's entirely in a PowerPoint format, which you wouldn't think you could tell an emotionally compelling story in fiction through PowerPoint, but you can. And so, you know, it's been helpful for me to like just think, is that a form? Is a grocery list a fiction form? Sure, a grocery list could be a fiction form. I'll take it, you know, and I give it a try. And sometimes these experiments work and sometimes they don't. But it's very inspiring when I see people taking mundane structures and turning them into fiction.
You talked about, is this a fiction form? And of course, so many different things can be. But you were earlier mentioning poetry, and that's, I enjoy reading poetry, but I don't necessarily know why. I haven't studied in particular. And I have this lasting question that I've annoyed far too many authors with, which is, where does something cross the line into being a poem? Like, if you take a poem from a book, and sometimes, especially with modern poetry, you line the words up so that they're written as a paragraph rather than divided up line by line as poetry, and you could as easily read it as a piece of just sort of a long paragraph that is nonetheless beautiful, but you know, not poetry. So what is it that makes a poem a poem?
You have encountered the mysterious form called prose poems. and that's exciting. It's kind mm-hmm. of a hybrid blend. But, you know, the way you can tell something is poetry, I think, is that it's using economy of language. So that doesn't necessarily mean short. There are plenty of, you know, epic poems that go on for book lengths, right? But it means that every word is being selected for a multiple range of powers. Like, it's doing a lot of work in a way that we don't do with fiction. And then another thing is poetry focuses on the musicality and sound of words. So although some fiction writers are extremely poetic in that sense, they're all, you know, there's other things factored in that make their work prose rather than poetry. But I would say those are the two biggies, is the sort of economy of language. You're trying to make every single thing do many tasks. And then also focused on that sound, the rhythm, the rhyme, the music of it, in a way that most fiction writers don't accomplish.
Matt, you've published novels and short stories. I don't know that you've published poetry, but you're certainly familiar with it. Is there one that is harder to write than the other? Or do you find a short story easier to write or harder to write than a novel?
Yes. And I've published a few poems, and I would wish I wrote a lot more poetry. I admire the form very much. I find that very difficult because of the compression factor. I find it much easier to write a 400-page novel because maybe I'm long-winded and I can write and write and overwrite. And maybe I don't have to concentrate so much on that very difficult choice about making every word matter. You know, I have a really good, smart colleague, William Staub, who's a great poet, and he specializes in teaching poetry, and I do some of the intro work, you know. So I learned from him and many other poet friends of mine just how important it is to think about compression. And for whatever reason, they seem a lot better at it than I am. But it's, you know, it's a useful skill, and I like students to write in multiple genres. I think that's a good experience for them because of that compression exercise, you know. Because when we get to a short story, it's still important for every word to matter. I think readers want kind of an experience, at least I do, to be engaged with a story that's moving quickly and is energetic and lively. That doesn't always mean it has to be short, right? But the longer it gets, I think the more work you have to put into continuing to make it energetic and lively and interesting and entertaining and all those things. So that 400-page novel I might crank out would maybe need 5 or 10 years of revising, you know.
I think most of our listeners would probably be aware just by hearing the differences in how we all sound that we're recording this conversation. I'm in a studio and everyone else is on a Zoom call with me, and I don't think that'll come as a surprise in the era that we're in right now. But part of that is that I get to see everybody's video, and Jackie, every time somebody mentions a different author, I see enthusiastic cheers from you in support of the various authors that have been mentioned. And Matt, I think it was, who mentioned earlier that one of the things that he tries to pass on is that people his students should read a lot more than they write, I think was the phrase that you used. And so, Jackie, I'm wondering in terms of reading more than we write, and in terms of just showing that enthusiastic appreciation for all these different authors that are mentioned, some people I think want to be that enthusiastic about literature, and maybe they just haven't found their thing yet, the thing that they enjoy or the thing that's really going to turn them on in that way. How do you find the kind of writing that is going to elicit that sort of passion from you as a reader?
I think in some respects, it's kind of like when Jennifer mentioned earlier how important it is to have community as a writer. And for people like myself, I just didn't have that for the longest. Even though I would be in workshops, I was always like, who is this weird, you know, 50-something-year-old, 30-year super senior still on campus, in workshops? So I think I was often on the outside, but if the people you're reading never leave you on the outside. And so I fangirl hard for the people that I love. And right now, I just want to say that I think that Wisconsin is having some, like, I don't know. The metaphor that's in my head for it is that for a long time, my husband did aquariums, and there is this point where you start an aquarium, you have to have an algae bloom for it to have a healthy environment for the fish. I think Wisconsin's having an algae bloom of like fantastic writers. Like right now, Krista Eastman's The Painted Forest, love, love, love. Megan O'Giblin has a book coming out in the fall. Barrett Swanson, his Lost in Summerland essay collection drops in May. I just found an old friend that I knew, not necessarily from the writing world, but a writer named Roland Jackson, who's in Milwaukee now, just finished up his MFA in Montana, and has a short story called Martial Artists in Passages North. And it's just fantastic. Like I just read it this morning and it's like all I can think about. My whole day is lost. Thanks, Roland. But I think that ultimately you find a writer you love. And then honestly, one of the best ways to find other writers that you will love because of that writer is to read their acknowledgments at the back of their book or the front of their book and figure out who is their writing community and how can you ghost stalk it by reading everything that their friends write? That's my theory.
It's interesting. It's interesting. A person who taught me pretty early on in my academic pursuits was telling us how we could learn about the value of a book by flipping back to the bibliography and seeing what works had contributed to it and if those were works of substantial note or whatever. So I guess this would be a similar concept in terms of literature. We are talking about writing today on Newsmakers, and I'm joined by three wonderful guests. You've just heard from Jackie Thomas, who is the 2020 winner of the Wisconsin People and Ideas Fiction Contest. You heard also from Matt Cashin, who's a creative writing professor at UWL, and from Jennifer Morales, who is the second place winner of last year's writing contest and the president of the Driftless Writing Center. And our conversation with them will continue in just a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our southwestern Wisconsin studio. Thank you very much for joining us today. I'm joined by three guests to talk about writing on today's program. Jennifer Morales, Jackie Thomas, and Matt Cashin have joined us today on the show. And I want to circle back to this idea of the early days of writing, the early experiences that these very experienced writers have had with the art. And Jennifer, let's start with you this time, talking about those early experiences as a writer. Maybe not like you have to write this paragraph for class or whatever, but like when was the first time that you wrote something that you had really put some serious energy into and actually showed it to somebody? Maybe it was a part of a class, but when was the first time that you wrote something seriously and actually showed it to someone?
It would be hard for me to pinpoint the exact moment because I do feel like as a young child, I got sort of a pat on the head. Isn't that cute sort of reassurance about my writing? I don't know that it was like, oh, you should go pursue this as a way of life later on, but definitely was indulged as a child in that way. But I have this memory of being in sixth grade and having written something. I think my first substantial attempt at fiction. So it was like probably a short story of like three pages or something, however much you write by hand in sixth grade. And my teacher had this habit of calling everyone up to the desk to like during silent reading to get their paper back so she could have like a mini conference. And she was holding my notebook paper short story on the end of her pencil, holding it out like it was so disgusting that she could not even keep it close to her body.
Oh, no.
And so I walked up with shaking knees and she handed it to me. I took it off the edge of the pencil, rather, and it had an A on it. And she said, Jennifer, this is the best thing any of my students have ever written. And I was just like, you are messing with me. But, you know, I'm 51 years old, but I still remember that moment in sixth grade where somebody gave me some really dramatic affirmation for my ability to write. So, you know, I'm grateful for those experiences. Although, you know, I sound very confident now, but, you know, it has been a lifelong struggle of, you know, does this matter? That kind of thing. Does anybody care? And people do. If you're telling a true story, and not true in the sense of factual, but a story that is true from yourself, people will resonate with it.
Jackie Thomas, what about you? Do you recall the first time that you showed some of your writing to someone?
Well, like Jennifer, I was in elementary school and I'm old enough to have learned from Basil readers, you know, the Dick and Jane how to read. And I wrote something and brought it into my teacher and no like writerly feedback, but she explained to me that the quotation marks, which I had not been taught how they worked, I thought that you just sort of sprinkled them, you know, like little stars over whenever anyone was talking. So I had just like, every line had like eight quotation marks just dribbled across the top. And she cleared that little structural problem up for me right away. So I felt like an insider. But when I was in middle school, which in my hometown was junior high, there were forensics competitions, like public speaking events. And I took poetry and was the stubborn geek who insisted on doing only their original work. And I suppose that was like the first time that I read poetry or wrote poetry that I shared with anyone. But it was because I grew up in Southwest Wisconsin on a little farm and had no access to books whatsoever. It was considered slothful and lazy to read in my family. But we would go, like, every couple of weeks, we'd go to Dubuque, Iowa to the warehouse market for groceries. And I found Rod McEwen books there, who is just like a horrible poet. I mean, maybe an okay lyricist for songs, but a horrible poet. But I was just in love with Rod McEwen. So he was my poetic inspiration.
You like what you like, I guess, right?
I mean, well, you like what you have access to.
That's
in
true.
Some respects, you know.
That's true. Matt, what about you?
I was also in love with Rod McEwen. You know, I mean, seriously, for some reason, I had access to a book of his poems. And I thought they were pretty cool at the time. But yeah, in high school, I wrote a lot of really, really bad poetry and shared that with a girl or two who was maybe breaking up with me or something, you know, thinking it might persuade them to change their minds, which of course it didn't. So that was my first experience of sharing my inner soul. But I was still interested in writing. And when I was an undergraduate at UNC Charlotte, I had the good fortune of meeting a really encouraging mentor, professor named Robin Hemley, who invited me into his office and had asked me to show him a story in order to get into his advanced fiction writing seminar, which I think was closed at the time. So it felt like I was kind of auditioning for it, you know. So I was very nervous and shy about that whole experience. And he said, "I like the story. Come on into the class, you know." And he sat me down in his office, and his first question was, "So who have you read? Like, what writers do you like to read?" And I had no answer for that at the time. So that was a good experience. And he continued to be encouraging and told me more than once if I was a little bit less lazy, then maybe I would write something good one day. So I appreciated that.
The contest that Jennifer and Jackie have been involved with is called the Wisconsin People and Ideas Fiction Contest. I should mention that the deadline for this year's contest is upcoming in the next several days. And if people want to learn more about that, they can visit the website, which is wisconsinacademy.org. That's the website for the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters, which sponsors the contest every year. And if you happen to be hearing this show outside of a submission period, you can certainly always find information about the contest and maybe apply for next year's contest there at wisconsinacademy.org. I'm interested as we close our conversation today. Somebody's been listening and wants to try some writing on for size. I think we all have a little bit of something to say, something that we can teach people from our experiences, or maybe a story that's inside of us that is wanting to come out. To each of you, I want to ask, what is a good first step for somebody who feels like they would like to explore being a writer, like to explore doing something other than just a class assignment? How do I become a writer is such a broad question, but I guess maybe that is what I'm asking. If somebody's interested in becoming a writer, how do they engage with that art for the first time if they haven't before? Matt, let's start with you. You're the professor. Inspire us.
Deadline pressure, right?
Yes. It works.
Well, you know, writers write. That's sort of the cliche. So we can talk about it and talk about it, but in the end, we teach ourselves many things just by going through the process of writing. And again, we give ourselves permissions maybe to write something that's imperfect. But we sit down and write stories, and maybe we don't try too hard or don't think too hard. We write what we know to be true and honest, you know, even if it's fiction, I think. And then once we have something down, we can worry with it and think about rewriting and how to make it better and more true and more honest, even if it is fiction. So you start by starting, right?
You start by starting. I mean, that's really there's truth in that, though. I mean, it seems simplistic, but it's true. You start by starting. You do by doing, right? Jennifer, sure. What about you? Is that your experience? Is that your advice to new writers?
Yeah. I mean, nobody's going to shame you for writing, you know, giving it an attempt. Mm-hmm. If you hate it, you can shred it. You can burn it. You could feed it to your dog. I don't know. You know, there's no shame in just giving things a try, seeing what works. But again, I'm going to promote community, you know, whether that's going to a reading, an open mic in your community. A lot of those things are happening virtually at the moment, but they're still happening. You know, putting up a note at your local coffee shop that you're looking for a writing group. You know, there's just a lot of ways to reach out to find other writers. And there is nothing more inspiring than being in a community of writers who is going to have your back and keep you motivated.
Many of our listeners are of course, within the service area covered by the Driftless Writing Center, which you're involved in. Talk about how people can find more information about that organization.
Our website's at driftlesswritingcenter.org. So you can find out there what we're up to. We have visiting writers, again, currently virtually. We have write-ins several times a week, which are also happening virtually. Open mics. So there's a lot of opportunities to connect with other writers.
Jackie, what about that advice to those early writers or people with a little bit less experience who are a little bit nervous about giving it a go?
I think if you have the urge to write, you're already doomed to be a writer, so you might as well just own it.
Doomed to it, you say.
Yeah, just own it. I think that workshops can sometimes feel intimidating because they tend to be like a semester long or longer than just a brief period. So I'm going to plug Shake Rag Alley, Center for the Arts in Mineral Point. Not only do they, for the people who win the Wisconsin People and Ideas Writing Contest, they have a week-long residency at Shake Rag and they give a reading at Shake Rag, which is how I have discovered some of the writers I love so much by going to those readings. But they have a writing retreat in May 21st to the 23rd. Their website is shakeragalley.org. And that's just like a 3-day commitment. So you can come and just sort of, you know, set some time aside to write and focus on writing. And the workshops are sometimes generative, but if you're not a person who likes to write in a room full of other people, they'll work around it. But I find that maybe it's scary to just walk into a workshop with other people who are striving to be writers, but conferences and retreats can be a little looser. You can drift away if you need to, but you can't leave the classroom. I don't think Matt would like that.
Well, I can plug the Shake Rag Alley Writers Center as being great. I was there. And yeah, it's a wonderfully supportive community. And also the Driftless Writing Center, as Jennifer says, is wonderful. They're doing a lot of great work. In La Crosse, we have a couple of organizations and clubs that are great for writers. The La Crosse area, I think it's called the La Crosse Area Writers Group. And the Great River Writes Festival happens every fall, spearheaded by a former student of mine, Jess Whitkins, does a great job with that. The Great River Writes, festival I just mentioned. But also the Mississippi Writers Valley Guild. So yeah, there are a lot of supportive places to get involved with.
Wonderful advice. Matt Cashin, you've heard just there, is a creative writing professor at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, an award-winning author in his own right. Matt, thank you very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Oh, thanks so much for having us. This was fun.
We've been talking as well to Jackie Thomas, who's the 2020 winner of the Wisconsin People and Ideas Fiction Contest. Jackie, thank you very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you. I'm always glad to meet more writers.
And Jennifer Morales is the second place winner in the 2020 Wisconsin People and Ideas Fiction Contest and the president of the Driftless Writing Center, which you've heard about just a little bit in this segment. Jennifer, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for celebrating reading and writing.
Absolutely. And if you would like to hear part of this conversation again or hear a previous episode of our show, you can do so at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our show today was produced by Dawn Jewell. John Davis helps us out as well as the rest of the La Crosse staff, and I thank them all. Please join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.